Vinny Timuraju, President of Reproductive Freedom for All, and Monica Simpson, Executive Director of Sister Song. That does it for our show. We're hiring a senior headline news producer, a director of audience, and a director of technology. To find out about all three jobs, go to democracynow.org/jobs. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
There's no one-size-fits-all puberty experience. If you're trans, intersex, or non-binary, know that you're not the only one feeling confused. For some intersex people, puberty may start later than age 14. You might experience some of puberty's changes and not others, and your body may or may not go through puberty on its own. There are medicines you can take to help your body start the process, like hormone replacement therapy. Some people decide on hormones or surgeries to help their bodies match up to their gender identity, or how they feel inside about themselves. Your gender identity is real. You should be the one to decide what changes you want to make to your body. If you're transgender or non-binary, you may find that your puberty experiences don't line up with your gender identity, or how you see yourself. That feeling can be uncomfortable, scary, and stressful. If that sounds like you, know that you're not alone. There are medicines you can take to delay puberty for a while. They're called puberty blockers, and they work like a stop sign by halting the hormones testosterone and estrogen that cause puberty changes like facial hair growth and periods. Puberty blockers are safe and can give you more time to figure out what feels right for you, your body, and your gender identity. You don't have to have all of the answers right now. So remember, it's all a work in progress, and it may take time to figure out what feels right to you, but talking to a trusted adult and a nurse or doctor may help. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
That's right. And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and at 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6:01 on a Tuesday, time for Off the Wall. And welcome, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined by Kyle.
Yeah, kind of.
We're live in the makeshift studios that we have going on here.
The remote location.
Well, it's not remote to us.
Satellite studio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing about satellites is who's revolving around whom? That's the question you have to ask.
Mm-hmm. Definitely earning its place in the history books.
Yeah, I think so. But nobody needs to know about what this studio is doing.
We do as much as we can, as many of the producers at this community radio station do. We pull our weight.
Yeah, you would be amazed. If you were a fly on the wall, you would be amazed. But you're not, so you won't be. Welcome. It's another week, last week of May, in fact. The year is just tearing past us, and maybe that's a good thing. Get it all over with.
But sort of not fast enough. It's got to go fast.
Yeah, please. I don't know where to begin. You saw all the papers I brought in here. My God, it's like a telephone book. We ran out of toner. That's how many things I printed out. Because there's so much to talk about. I didn't even print out anything about the military parade that's coming on June 14th. That is going to be, well, plenty of time to talk about that. But boy, we are skydiving without a parachute at this point. All right, let's focus on academia, because we're broadcasting from Stony Brook University, and that is academia, if I've ever seen academia. And academia, right now, I've ever said that word in my life. It's under fire. It's the enemy. It's in the crosshairs. I think I'm out of metaphors, but basically, Trump doesn't like it. Doesn't like colleges, universities, smart people.
Well, being intelligent has been on the decline for a very long time.
Well, that's our own doing,
right?
But it's being attacked too. We're not moving fast enough.
Insofar as what's valued in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
It's now actually under the microscope and in a target. You know, it's something that people feel they're able to assail and attack and basically bend to their will. And the thing about those institutions is they know better, and they should know better. Clear about it. Often, places like Stony Brook, places that have any self-respect.
Yeah. And I want to say that. I want to continue saying that. And I certainly will call it if it goes in a different direction. But right now, Harvard is the enemy. Harvard is the enemy of this country. And by this country, I mean this government. It's not the enemy of the people of this country. Certainly not. It's an institution that's been around well longer than the United States itself has been around, if you can believe that. That's how long Harvard has been around.
It isn't actually, but people would have you believe that.
It isn't actually what?
The enemy.
Oh, no, definitely not.
I know you're being...
I already clarified that. Yeah. I don't mean that. It's the government, this ridiculous government that we have. So today, the Trump administration has decreed that the federal government must cancel all remaining federal contracts with Harvard University. That's worth an estimated $100 million. That's according to a federal letter. No, I'm sorry. It's according to a letter sent to federal agencies on Tuesday, a regular letter. It also instructs agencies to find alternative vendors for future services. This is all because Harvard won't bend the knee. They won't cave into his demands. His demands being that he gets to say who is allowed to go to Harvard and get all kinds of personal information about students. Get to judge them based on if they're from the right place or if they have the right ideology or if they ever said anything critical of him on social media. It's a nightmare. This is not how things work. And the fact that it's gone this far shows how many people are willing to cave to let him get his way. The military parade is just one. I said I wouldn't talk about it today. I won't. But that would not be happening if there were strong people in power to say no. That's ridiculous. We can't do that, and we won't do that. Anyway, this letter is the latest example of the Trump administration's determination to bring Harvard to its knees by undermining its financial health and global influence. Since we were on the air last, he has basically decreed that no foreign students be allowed to go to Harvard. Apparently foreign students are also the enemy. So he wants to ban them from attending Harvard and in the process hurt Harvard immensely because I think over a quarter of their students are foreign students. Many of the students right here at Stony Brook are foreign students. They are a valuable part of the community. They bring a lot to the university, and they make for a better society, a better world by getting an education at these institutions. It's nothing new. It's not something that is a controversial policy of any sort, but it's something that Trump can sink his teeth into and get his followers to agree with him because these people must be bad. He's going on about the whole anti-Semitic thing at Harvard, saying that they teach anti-Semitism, nonsense like that. Keep in mind, when students were protesting against Israeli atrocities, they were protesting against the administration of these universities. All right, so then you can't go around and blame that same administration for being on their side, because they definitely were not on their side. They're the ones that called the cops in institution after institution, including Stony Brook, and had people forcibly removed from lying peacefully on grass or cement or whatnot. So the whole thing, it's absurd. It's an absurd premise, but it's easy to sell. And we see it every day in the media, how you can just make these accusations, not provide any evidence whatsoever, but get people to say, yeah, Harvard's anti-Semitic. It makes no sense. Show me exactly what you're talking about, rather than saying this course is anti-Semitic.
It's just a label to make the institution under attack radioactive. And to make the action radioactive, mm-hmm. Right? It's a label used to make whatever people are doing something you can't question. It's a short circuit of logic.
Now, in addition to hurting Harvard, Trump is hurting everyone, because the amount of research that goes on at Harvard benefits the world. We're talking about all kinds of scientific breakthroughs and studies and things that have just been tied to various universities, Harvard being the leading one. And by cutting off more than $3 billion in federal funding, it's a lot, because we used to support educational institutions. But to cut that off, imagine what you are cutting off. You're cutting off all kinds of access to science, to technology, to all kinds of research. And instead, during his campaign for a second term, Trump labeled various universities as Marxist maniacs and lunatics. Show me the Marxism that's at play in the sciences, in biology and chemistry and physics and all that. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. But it's an easy target. It's easy to get people who have no idea what actually goes on in a university to point their finger and say, these people are evil, because they're the unknown. It's the same basic thing they do with immigrants, with foreigners, the same level of hostility, except now it's towards people who are trying to get a higher education. They must be up to something. They're suspicious, and hence evil. It goes on. So many stories about this, and forgive me on this one because our time was running out when I printed it, so it might be hard to read this. But apparently now Trump is going to be or going to try to be banning foreign students from applying for visas. He wants to pause new student visa interviews, and that's going to happen in his world while they study the social media that these applicants were involved in. In other words, what did they say? What do they think? And are they in the right mindset to be allowed to come to our country and study at one of our universities? In preparation for such required vetting, The administration is ordering U.S. embassies and consular sections to pause scheduling new interviews for such student visa applicants. And this was signed by Marco Rubio today, Secretary of State. If the administration carries out the plan, it could severely slow down student visa processing, and that does affect us right here at Stony Brook. It also could hurt many universities who rely heavily on foreign students to boost their financial coffers, obviously. Effective
immediate. Americans are too broke. Well, stupid.
I, you know, that's a part of it.
Overachieving morons.
Well, I mean, you know, we're painting ourselves into that corner, aren't
broke
we?
Broke morons.
Yeah. It's
okay.
Ridiculous.
No, go on with the serious conversation.
Effective immediately in preparation for an expansion of required social media screening and vetting. Consular sections should not add any additional student or exchange visitor, which is known as FM and J visas. Until further guidance is issued, which we anticipate in the coming days. The administration had earlier imposed some social media screening requirements, but those were largely aimed at returning students who may have participated in protests against genocide, because we don't protest against genocide in this country. No, sorry, we embrace it. You know who gave a commencement speech fairly recently? Your friend Scott Pele from 60 Minutes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like the trifecta for Trump. It's, you know, a journalist at a university speaking about, I think of a third thing. Speaking about free speech. Yeah, there you go. That's another enemy.
I thought you were going to say Kermit, but.
No, he was at Wake Forest. Kermit?
Yeah, he gave a commencement speech.
I saw that in the news. What was that about?
It was all over the news. I don't know. It was silly. It was, you know, encouraging, but apparently I think it was Maryland. It was one of the universities that Jim Henson had gone to.
It's a puppet. It can be at a million universities at the same time.
It's a celebrity puppet, to be honest, so I think you should really...
What the hell is a celebrity puppet?
Think about what you're saying. It's just not, like, your average, run-of-the-mill thrift store.
I could go down to Toys R Us right now, get a Kermit puppet. Is that a celebrity puppet? Is that, you know, or does it have to be held by a celebrity to be a celebrity puppet?
Okay, he's perhaps a tastemaker in the puppet scene, and you know, other puppets trade in his likeness. But
I can't, of course,
to have the actual Muppet there is a big deal.
Toys R Us went out of business? I just found that out.
Yeah, they're gone.
That's why I can't. Okay, whatever. Who sells toys then? Somebody sells toys
been
still, right?
They extra gone.
You know.
Well, no, all the toys are tariffed. Anyway, go on.
They're
Scott
tariffed,
Pele.
And kids only get $3 now instead of $35 or whatever Trump thinks they're getting. You know, he should just write a book about what he thinks the world is, because, boy, that will beat any science fiction.
Right, we're done with broke
It
moron.
Really will. What do bananas cost, Trump? Tell me how much you think a single banana costs. Yeah. $50? You know? Probably never had a banana in his life, anyway.
So, Scott Pele.
Scott Pele, yeah,
this
I'm sorry.
Anchor for 60 Minutes?
You watch 60 Minutes. You should know.
Yeah.
Why are you asking me? Yeah. So he says his name every week.
I believe a host. Yeah, one of the hosts, of course.
In a commencement speech at Wake Forest University, which is in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, which took place actually on May 19th, CBS News 60 Minutes correspondent Scott Pele began after the standard niceties by paraphrasing a quote from an author you may have heard of named George Orwell about liberty, meaning the freedom to tell people things they don't want to hear. And in fact, that's our tagline for this show, because a lot of people don't want to hear us, and we're constantly telling them things.
So, in fairness, we don't want to hear them either. I mean, we hear them.
We don't want to hear ourselves, or we want to hear the people telling us they don't want to hear us.
Yeah, I mean, like, we hear that, but it's not really that interesting to us. They tell us that we hear all of the things that are said, and of course, you know, we're receptive to the concept that they don't really want to hear what we're saying, but it's, you know, it's equal, it's mutual.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear each other. That's true.
Yeah. We listen, we hear sound. But...
You want us to talk about Eurovision, we'll do that if the world becomes a better place.
Yeah.
But until it does, we're going to talk about this.
But like, shocker, you tell us you don't want to hear what we have to say. Like, we are really waiting in bated breath for your opinion.
Well, anyway, so here are some of the things that he said during his graduation speech, which, spoiler alert, has triggered the MAGA minions. Yeah, MAGA minions out there are triggered very easily. I fear there are some people in the audience who won't want to hear what I have to say today, is how he began. He added, as a reporter, I have learned to respect opinions. Reasonable people can differ about the life of our country. To move forward, we debate, not demonize. We discuss, not destroy. Anyone have a problem with that? No? I'm looking at the right wing of our audience. No? Okay. We'll see if that lasts.
And the pretense for a discussion is that both parties are engaging in that mutual respect.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't get shown in one way or the other, you can't expect that it's actually a discussion.
Continuing with Scott Pelley's words, but in this moment, this morning, our sacred rule of law is under attack. Journalism is under attack. Universities are under attack. Freedom of speech is under attack. An insidious fear is reaching through our schools, our businesses, our homes, and into our private thoughts. The fear to speak. Do I dare go on? All right. In America, if our government is, in Lincoln's words, of the people, by the people, and for the people, then why are we afraid to speak? Today, great universities are threatened with ruin. Now, he didn't say Trump's name, but obviously everybody knew what he was talking about. And the reason people don't say his name, it's not because we're afraid. It's because why give him even more personal attention? We all know what the threat is. It's the threat we have to defeat. He is a little person. He really is. When you take away all the advantages he's been given, all the free rides, well, you got nothing. You got very, very little, and it's pretty pathetic.
You mean a tacky slob?
I'm not gonna just draw a picture like that. Anyway, after highlighting a declaration signed by the president and provost of Wake Forest, and the leadership of other institutions of higher learning, the president of Wake Forest, not the president of the United States, Pelley added, why attack universities? Why attack journalism? Because ignorance works for power. He then laid out the blueprint for destroying the First Amendment rights to freedom of the press and freedom of speech, saying, and this is how you do it, take notes, first, make the truth seekers live in fear, sue the journalists for nothing. Then, send masked agents to abduct the college student, a writer of her college paper who wrote an editorial supporting Palestinian rights, and send her to her prison in Louisiana and charge her with nothing. Then move to destroy law firms that stand up for the rights of others. Yeah. With that done, power can rewrite history. With grotesque, false narratives, they can make heroes criminals and criminals heroes. Boy, he's good. He's good. I got to watch him more. Scott Pelley, wow. They can change the definition of the words we use to describe reality. Diversity is now described as illegal. Equity is to be shunned. Inclusion is a dirty word. But coming back to Orwell, this is an old playbook. There is nothing new in this. George Orwell, in 1949, he warned of what he called newspeak. He understood that ignorance works for power. Well, let's take a look at some of the immediate responses. Dip S, I can't say the whole word. That's not what's happening. The institutions have been attacking America. America is now starting to fight back. America did not start this. Liberalism, feminism, and communism did, but America will win this. That's from Bizarro World, and you must live in a bizarro world to come up with twisted logic like that. First of all, you are not America. You do not represent America. You represent an ugly side of America. And when America wins this, people like you will not have the forum you have right now. Yeah, you can still spout your crazy nonsense. But to say that free thought is the enemy, that's what we've been fighting ever since our inception. And we'll continue. We won't be intimidated. Next, from someone named Mama Bear. Why do we take these people seriously? I don't know.
No, that's like a thing.
I know. The college should be renamed to Woke Forest, Remember, they're targeting that college now that had Scott Pelley give the talk. Remember when hard work was rewarded versus simply being rewarded for your gender or race? You know, I know when hard work of immigrants was not rewarded nearly enough, but yet we still all took advantage of it. And yet we somehow label them as the enemy and throw them into a prison. I remember that.
I worked really hard, and I didn't, you know, I didn't get to just be male and white and be rewarded.
You are male and white.
Yeah. I mean, should why'd I have to work so hard? If that statement's so true, I should have just had it all, like, you know, presented to me.
These people with the victim complex, what is it exactly they feel they've been robbed of? Because they're not the ones toiling in the fields. They're not the ones working in the kitchens. They're not the ones that can barely get by and have to share rooms with people and live in fear of being deported or victimized in one way or another. What is your disadvantage exactly? Yeah, I know life is tough. Life is tough for everybody. But it's got nothing to do with immigrants. It's got nothing to do with college students. It's got nothing to do with inclusion of any sort. So what exactly is the issue? And don't listen, you know, to the big orange guy with his solutions. They don't apply to you. He doesn't care about you. You know, talk to other people, actual real citizens of this nation, and have a conversation. But don't assume they're your enemy. Don't assume that everyone is out to get you, because that's paranoid delusion. And they use that. They use that to manipulate you.
Yeah, and it's that simplification. Like, his whole thing is about oversimplifying things so that you don't actually have to have sort of an intelligent, nuanced look at it that might involve a little bit more than some scapegoat that is sort of easy to digest intellectually. But to actually, like, I worked very, very hard for my entire, you know, life, all of it, and I could easily talk about how royally, neglected I feel I've been by opportunities and by the fruits of my labors. I could go on and on about that, but I understand that there are systemic reasons behind it, and I'm choosing to think it through rationally and have that intellectual perspective, as dangerous as that may seem. Plenty of those simplistic answers would justify me piling on and being, I'm well conditioned to see a scapegoat presented
answer. Everybody can complain and come up with reasons why they're the victim. I know. I get that. And you have some very valid things to complain about, as do I, as do most people we know. But I guarantee you that those of us in this particular circle of citizenry, we have probably had more advantages today that we just don't even think about, that the people that we are talking about now, they can't do that. They can't just walk around freely. They can't, you know, they don't have the money to spend to even get a latte somewhere, you know, if we want to go into.
Well, it's also how I was raised.
Uh-huh.
And I was raised to be caring and to look out for the people around me, because I realize, because my proximity to them, I'm not insulated in the same way. If you're a person that has grown up in a gilded lifestyle, your distance and proximity from everybody else is something you take for granted. So it's a different attitude. Like, you are more cutthroat. You think, like, oh, everything's mine, you know, and you're
first.
Just out for yourself.
It's
yeah,
me first.
Yeah, yeah.
That is really, you know, they say America first, but you take away all those extra letters and just leave the me, and it's me first. That's what these people are. They just want it for themselves first. Look at the way they drive, okay? Me first, definitely.
Are there things that I roll my eyes at that I'm like, oh, man, more of this? I mean, or like tokenism. I see it. I'm aware of it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not mad that it exists. I can appreciate that there is purpose in elevating people that do not ordinarily get an opportunity. Opportunities that I might have had or other people like me would have easily taken for granted. But, so it's again, nuance and intellectual attitude towards it instead of grasping for that lowest ring of simplistic scapegoating.
But being woke is a good thing in my eyes. And there is nothing better than hearing, quote unquote, woke people making fun of woke traditions or other people or things like that, because that's the nature of progress. Yeah, we all want to improve things. And sometimes we get it wrong. And sometimes we're absurd in the process. But they are good people, and they're trying to make things better. And they don't have it in for anybody who is old school or doesn't fit certain check boxes or whatever. And yeah, sometimes we have to object. Sometimes we have to say, that's going too far. But to make them the enemy, to wipe them out completely, that is going to hurt everybody. That's going to hurt our country. It's going to set us back decades, if not more. And it's just, it's childish. It really is.
It's meant only to set a tone, too, of mutual respect and community, that sort of that actual America with a capital A. And I think what's more heartening is people that take up the mantle, they take up the example that could be maybe coming from media or coming from corporate America, and actually build bridges with people that are unlikely to be someone they support, or finding commonality, finding respect in people. Those stories are what that leadership sets the stage for, authentic bridge building and strengthening of our social fabric. And I think that's the missed opportunity from the right, just grabbing for the scapegoat thing, not realizing, wow, we could have a take on this or a take on that. Instead of rejecting all of it wholesale, let's pick it up and do it better than like the Democrats have done, mm-hmm. or better than what corporate America has done, or give it a distinct twist. There's nothing wrong with that. It's innovation. And that it's just derided wholesale is, I think, totally a missed opportunity. And it's really not the purpose of all of those initiatives that feel like a corporate checkbox, or they're fulfilling some mission or some quota. All of that can be contrived, but it is, like I said, merely to set the stage for people to take up authentic examples of like sticking up for your neighbor, taking an interest in cultures you might not, you know, understand or be down with and fully accepting of, or understanding that there may be things that you're struggling with, or that your community that you could help with, that people might not know to ask you for that help. That kind of lending a hand is part of the spirit, I think, that's been lost in this.
I think you touched upon something really important there when you say stick up for your neighbor. You know, if we all did that, if we all thought of our neighbors as people we should stick up for, you know, the neighbor on your left, the neighbor on your right, the neighbor across the street, regardless of what kind of run-ins you've had in the past or disputes over land or noise or whatnot, if things hit the fan, you want to be there to protect them. And I feel the same way when I'm driving. I want to protect the person in front of me, the person behind me, the people around me. We're traveling companions. You know, they're not the enemy. If you think of everybody around you as the enemy, what kind of a life is that? But if you have that, if you can achieve that, where you're there for each other, same thing with family, you know, then you have at least the ability to communicate, have a conversation, explore differences, reach resolutions, and that is more than what most of us seem to have today. That's a starting point. That's where we can begin the conversation and not just label each other as you're too woke, or you're too fascist, or whatever we want to call people, just based on who they support and not their actions necessarily. This is, I think, what we have to do if we're going to get through this. And it's very much in doubt if we're going to get through this.
Yeah, I think I love where you're going with that, because I think that is the antidote to tribalism, is creating a new tribe. And there are really more authentic and more interesting conversations, because you have people that are of difference, that do not, like, again, as opposed to being a part of your sort of clan or your cult or just being indoctrinated into something mm-hmm. where everybody's the same. That homogeneity, sameness is itself uninteresting.
And that's never what we were about. And well, I mean, a lot of people have tried to get us there, but that's not what this country
is about.
I
want to see that as a trend or a challenge. I want to see more bridge building and people of totally different worlds, how they get along versus how they're entrenched in their own camps.
Well, think about it this way. You know, the guy who makes your sandwich at the deli, the mechanic who fixes your car, the doctor who listens to your symptoms, you know, you don't know what their politics are. Do you care what their politics are, where they come from, left, right, whatnot? No. And if you saw them in distress on the side of the road, you would stop to help them. If you saw them in a bar, you'd say hi. You know, that is the starting point where we see the things that truly matter, the everyday things where we support each other and are there to help us get through the day a little better than the way we started. You know, if we maintain that, then when it comes down to, oh, you support this guy, I support that person, it doesn't have to be an end to a relationship. It can be a way to further the discussion and treat someone with respect because you know this person. You're going to listen. You're going to try and put forth your perspective, your feelings, and be listened to. And that's the way forward. That's the only way forward.
So. And I also think a healthy dose of humor, especially if you're maintaining differences, mm-hmm. is so crucial. Like if you have a sense of humor, not making anybody the butt of a joke, but a mutual sense of humor about your differences or about interacting and caring in a warm, like sharing the mutual warmth of being Americans, regardless of being so different. I think that humor itself that is some of the stuff we're really missing out on, because people that are of different backgrounds and that aren't alike getting along, that is it's both heartwarming, but also it can be very funny. And yeah. It is a funny aspect of American society and is our quirk.
I think the measure is really if you can laugh at yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Somebody who cannot laugh at themselves, I don't think you can reach them. Because they just take things too seriously. They're too sensitive. They believe they know everything, and you are never going to convince them of anything.
Well, and I think that comes from judgment. If you feel you're being judged by the left, or if you feel you're being constantly scrutinized by the right or the far right, or mm-hmm. you know, centrists or independents or libertarians, people that you know you don't even understand how they can critique you because they're not even in the dominant sphere of politics or society or pop culture or whatever. But that you can – I just – it's – it is really about the ability to not take yourself so seriously and not feel you're under that scrutiny. Because if you do, you tense up and you have to be serious. You can't have that sense of humor.
So getting back to the universities, Harvard in particular, Harvard is basically the sacrificial lamb at this point. Every day, Trump takes another shot at them. Now, we can just sit back and watch. We can say, wow, look at that. That's something. And we can also intimidate ourselves into not getting on his bad side. Or we can stand up and say, no, this is not what we are going to tolerate. I don't see why you wouldn't do the latter. I don't see why anybody would not see this as a fundamental threat to democracy, to freedom of speech, to education, to so many things. We're talking about a university that wants to keep running as a university. It's been accused of things. Universities get accused of things all the time. It has not been proven that anything that's being accused of is actually true. But, you know, accuse away, sure. But to completely shut down and cripple an institution because it doesn't agree with you, I think, you know, right there you see who the threat is and why that has to be fought at every level. So my thought is there should not be a university in the country that does not stand up with Harvard and say, no, this is wrong. We are doing what they're doing. We're not caving in to this kind of intimidation. We will not do that. Now, what is Trump going to do? Is he going to declare war on every university in the country? Because, boy, that's going to be one hell of a fight. You know, right now, Harvard, that's a pretty monumental opponent. But imagine, you know, however many universities there are in the nation, you know, a fight, even if it's half of those, that is something that he cannot win. And by us winning this battle, including Stony Brook, we come out all the stronger. Education is valued. Freedom of speech is victorious. And yeah, we will still have demonstrations. We will still have accusations, but we will have independence. We will have a way of dealing with it, a way of figuring it all out on our own without government interference. And I don't see why anybody, right, left, center, whatnot, would want government interference in a university. You could tell yourself, well, they're too woke, they're too liberal. You know, there are all kinds. I went to Stony Brook. There are all kinds of perspectives. You find what you seek, all right? And if you want to join the Young Socialists, then you'll find socialists. If you want to join the conservatives, you'll find them too. You know, everybody is represented to one degree or another. And where there's unfairness, there should be challenges. And there are. It's a learning experience. Let's not forget that. Universities are where people learn. And what lesson are they learning now with this this force bearing down on them, telling them what to think, what to say, how to act, who to be? How are they going to be the day after graduation day? You know, think about that. Because I think we've forgotten that these are learning institutions. I mean, boy, did I make a lot of mistakes when I went to Stony Brook. I mean, there are some things I still can't talk about, but I learned, and it's affected who I am to this day. The university, the radio station, all of it. And I want other people to have that opportunity throughout. Find something funny, Kyle? What are you laughing at?
No, I'm thinking about my degree and mistakes.
Uh-huh. We've all made them. Come on. The thing is, the mistakes I made, you know, the trespasses of various one sort or another, couldn't do that today because first of all, there's cameras everywhere. There's all kinds of social media taking note of everything you do. I fear that people can't be as experimental and mischievous as we once had the freedom to be.
I guess my baseline is that, like, journalism and mass communications itself was already, like, being thrown into the dustbin of history. It was already being treated as an aging sort of a field with no prospects. And it never was like a field where, you know, there were great riches. I think what was popular when I was in school is nursing, because they were predicting, you know, everybody was aging, so they would need a lot of, like, geezer care or whatever. And so, yeah, going to nursing, they need more nurses. So that was where the money was or whatever. And, like, that, to look back now and think, like, oh, gee, had I not been interested in journalism or not been interested in media, maybe I would have fared better. I don't regret the interest. In fact, under duress and moments like this, I take great comfort in the fact that it was already an area that was derided and considered dying, like newspapers or whatever firm or wherever you would have gone for work was already being foretold as like, oh, there's no more of that. You're never going to do
that. Do you see that maybe now it's not dying anymore? Maybe now people see, because it's such a threat to certain people, it really is of value.
That's where I'm going with the whole thought line of thought is that, look, when I started, it was already thought of that way. Now, it's probably, you know, popular culture would like you to believe that it's as bad, if not worse, and a dead end and blah, 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 blah. But I wouldn't change my choices. And in fact, I'm more proud of what that represents in situations like this.
Is this other story that I'm just looking at right now?
But I made other mistakes too.
This other story about this this former Virginia sheriff named Scott Jenkins. You see this guy, Kyle? It's the face of corruption right there. Basically, this guy was found guilty on fraud and bribery charges. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison back in March. Basically, he was selling badges. For thousands of dollars, he was basically selling badges that allowed you to become a deputy sheriff.
Yeah.
Without any training or vetting, he pushed for people to be able to possess guns, even if they were convicted felons. $5,000, $10,000. And Trump pardoned him. Now, you know, you can say what you will about law and order. How does this bolster the argument that this guy stands for law and order? This guy could not be more guilty. He was somebody in law enforcement selling access to law and order, to guns, and personally benefiting from it, and rightfully convicted, rightfully sent away, because that is extremely dangerous. And Trump just comes in and says, no, you know what? I like this guy. Of course, he was a Trump supporter, so I guess that's all it takes.
Did you say he was a sheriff?
He was a sheriff, yeah.
Yeah, sheriff's departments are a breed of their own. I mean, if you know
Not like that. I'm sorry. You don't get to do that.
No,
you
but don't. It's emblematic of some of the distinctions. I mean, in certain parts of the country, I mean, the uniform sorts of conduct, the way they're run, I mean, maybe procedures and law and stuff like that is pretty similar. But they have a lot of autonomy, and I think sheriff's departments have a distinction of harboring people like this in ways that other, let's say, larger forces, other city, smaller city forces, they just don't have quite the autonomy. And there's a lot of examples. I know there are a lot of sheriff's departments that do a lot of important work. They do a lot of stuff in various counties and all of that, but and incredible investigative work too. I mean, there's noble and effective leadership there, and many officers, I'm sure, who do not understand that pardon either. But it doesn't surprise me, let's say, that it is a sheriff getting away with that yet again. almost didn't get away with it.
It's the way he got away with it, though. It's not that he, you know, was found not guilty by an all-white jury or something like that. It's the President of the United States comes in and says, yeah, this guy, he had a position of trust, he betrayed that trust, he profited from it, he made a dangerous situation, but I'm going to let him go because he supports me.
Well,
that is not standing up for law and order by any definition, and I defy anybody to tell me otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, that's like the case in point. That's textbook corruption. That itself, it doesn't need any further elaboration. Like, it speaks for itself, the that part of the story. But it does also grab me, I think, that you got to be really careful right now, especially with these kinds of ICE situations, people just coming up in unmarked plain clothes, and all of this sort of vigilantism, I think, that mm-hmm. some of his supporters, the far right or MAGA inductees
know they'll get away with it.
There have been some cosplaying as law enforcement, to say nothing of their sort of fetishization of weaponry and body armor and that kind of stuff that people on the left would never get away with, I guess. But I think you really have to be careful when someone flashes a badge. It could be a situation like this, just approaching you and trying to hustle you into thinking you need to comply with their orders is a big red flag. And I think everybody should be on guard at this point in our country, more so with people presenting as some sort of official when they are not.
This is bad for everyone, and I hope people get that.
What about the children?
Yeah, exactly. Can they buy badges too? All right, moving overseas, and this is disgusting, and I have not seen much coverage of this in the media at all. And this is something that I think Democrat, Republican, and mass media all guilty of. Chanting death to Arabs, singing May Your Village Burn, groups of young Israeli Jews made their way through Muslim neighborhoods of Jerusalem's Old City yesterday during an annual march marking Israel's conquest of that part of the city. Palestinian shopkeepers closed early and police line the alleys ahead of the march that often becomes a rowdy and sometimes violent procession of ultranationalists. It's imagine this happening the other way. Imagine a mob basically saying death to Jews. You know, we'd be all over that because it's wrong. It's horrible. And saying death to Arabs is bad, is as bad, absolutely. People are people, and when you intimidate and terrorize, you're on the wrong side. Hours earlier, a small group of protesters, including an Israeli member of parliament, stormed a compound in East Jerusalem belonging to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. I want to repeat that. A group of protesters, including a member of parliament, stormed the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. What the hell? What is this? What has that country turned into? And why? Why do we keep blindly backing it up and refusing to say strongly, stop this or you become our enemy? And, you know, I know so many people who have said the same thing, you know, who are Jewish and are ashamed by what Israel has turned into. It's turned into an absolutely horrible place. Yeah, some people get along just fine. But you cannot ignore the people who are being victimized. And right now, you know, we're well over 50,000 dead in the Gaza alone. And horrors in the West Bank. All kinds of atrocities committed by settlers. And all we hear about in this country is the threat of anti-Semitism. Because people criticize Israeli policy, that instantly turns them into anti-Semites. It's nuts.
As I said, radioactivity right there. As soon as you need to make something, don't criticize this, you make it radioactive, and then nobody touches it. Sweet.
There is no solution to this. It really isn't. It's gotten to the point. It's so bad. We have stood by and watched as the extremists have gotten their way. How do you undo that? You know? And definitely there are extremists on both sides. Absolutely. We've long said this, but this was not the solution at all to terrorize, to slaughter. You know, there are going to be acts of revenge for what's going on now, 100 years from now. That's how bad this is. And what exactly are they gaining? You know, maybe some short-term gain. But it's just, it's sad.
They're gaining the prospect of something in the future that they can be victims of yet again to get more sympathy. I think it's the paradox of that entire society.
Look, I'm not denying that, you know, living in Israel, you live with a certain amount of fear of what could happen. But when you add up the numbers see who is actually being victimized, losing their families, losing their homes, I think you'll find that the victimhood lies somewhere else, and that what you have is some tension, unpleasantness, and I don't know. I wish I could just say this is what you have to do. I don't think there's a solution anymore. I really don't. Look, what happened in D.C. with the murder of the two people from the Israeli embassy? Same thing, you know. It's a horrible thing. Anybody who justifies that is a terrible person. But there's a difference between justifying something and saying, I could see that coming. I understand why that happened. Same thing with 9/11. What a horrible thing, but you'd have to be blind not to see something like that coming in light of American foreign policy. Yeah, somebody was going to do something terrible.
But is that a justification to eliminate the critique of capitalism or eliminate the critique of the Israeli...
No, you cannot eliminate the critique of anything.
Policies.
You have to continue putting things under a microscope.
But that's what that label...
Exactly, yeah. By saying, if you criticize this, then you're that. That just shuts down all dialogue. When you shut down all dialogue, then the zealots and the extremists, they get their way constantly. And all you have
is... We have to cover for more obscenity.
You have one negative versus another negative. You know, and it's the coverage of that horrible event in D.C. Was itself rather biased in the way it was portrayed. You know, instead of focusing on 100 Palestinians being killed almost daily by Israel for no particular reason, just because, well, there's a terrorist in there somewhere, to wall-to-wall coverage for these two people, yes, it was in our country, and it was, you know, particularly emotional because you saw them. They could have been your neighbors. Yes, absolutely.
But, of course, the correlation is only words.
It's just sad to see that one life seems to mean more than another. And, unfortunately, that's what we keep doing over and over again. If we focused on any kind of injustice against any group of people, if we did that equally, then maybe we'd have a chance of not having such an imbalance, you know, and you wouldn't have so many horrible acts that regimes get away with because nobody seems to care. I wanted to say more on this, but we're out of time. But I'd love to hear comments from others out there, and we can continue this conversation in the future. otw@2600.com is our email address, and we certainly love to hear from our listeners. And, you know, there are other things to talk about as well. You know, some of these things, though, they're front and center because, boy, it's affecting a lot of people. It's taking us down some dark alleyways and just making us wonder, how could this possibly get worse, and how can we possibly make it better? Can we make it better?
Yeah. There are myriad aspects of this. Just, it's not going away. And the fact of the matter is we're bankrolling it, all of us, in America. So, yeah.
That's got to mean something.
When other normal things don't work and you hear more devastation, that's what's being funded, and we are all complicit.
Never be afraid to ask questions, or, you know, to say something that might be an inconvenient fact to somebody. You have the right to know. You have the right to challenge. That goes for us. That goes for your parents, your teachers, your government, other governments. Everybody, you have the right to seek out the truth yourself, to ask questions and not be labeled in a certain way. Hey, we're out of time. We will see you next week. Good night.
Bye.
Not guilty. Getting in your way. While you're trying to steal the day. Not guilty. And I know before the rest, I'm not trying to steal your best. I am not trying to be smart, I only want what I can get. I'm really sorry for your raging head, but like you heard me said, not guilty. You're signing me a writ while I'm trying to do my bit. I don't expect to take your heart, I only want what I can get. I'm really sorry that you're in the fed, but like you heard me said, now I'm guilty. I'm a rose of Madeleine.
upset the apple cart. I really want what I can get. I'm really sorry that you've been misled, but like you heard me say, now I'm guilty.